Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Yeah, that's right. And this week we're going to talk about a movie. Mostly Martha is the name of the movie.
Indeed.
And it is a German film.
On this episode number...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, this is episode number 52.
Maybe people don't care. I don't know.
But well,
I could tell when it wasn't there.
We say that at the beginning and they're like, okay, now I know right where we're at. It's like a location in your cell phone.
Yeah. That's how we know where we are.
That's right.
Pretty far along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So Mostly Martha.
Mm-hmm.
It's a German movie and I... was thinking of Valentine's Day because I knew that would be coming up soon.
Yeah,
and it's you would think it's a romantic comedy. Let me read from the back of the DVD.
Okay,
I'll skip the first couple sentences, which are praising its many awards. Martha is a single woman who lives for one passion: cooking. The head chef at a chic restaurant, Martha has no time for anything or anyone else. But her solitary life is shaken when a fateful accident brings her sister's 8-year-old daughter, Lena, to her doorstep. As Martha struggles to care for her headstrong niece, the restaurant hires a charming and carefree Italian chef named Mario. Suspicious of Mario's intentions, Martha slowly discovers he has a special recipe for living, one that will touch her home and her heart. With its tantalizing blend of comedy, romance, and food, Mostly Martha is a movie to savor.
Well, so, I don't disagree with that.
No.
I liked it very much.
But good.
Yeah.
I've watched it many a time, but when I first rented it, can you hear the dog snoring?
No, I don't.
Oh, good. Well, sorry. You may have to edit that out because she just started snoring. She's on logs. Okay. But when I first rented it, Hannah was in the midst of deep depression. And so this was for family movie night. And so I was renting something that was, the critics loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. And, you know, we got to right before Mario shows up. And I looked over at everybody and I was like, I'm so sorry. And they paused the movie and said, why did you rent this? What was it the point? Because it was really kind of depressing up to that
I'm
point.
So depressed.
It was not super depressing, but it's not uplifting, funny, or any of those other things they mentioned. You know,
not at that point in the movie it wasn't.
No.
But I Mario's, thought overall it was very much.
Yeah, but yeah. Mario starts to kind of inject life into it. But
right.
Yeah. But
which
Martha
is really, really cool when you think about it, because that kind of mirrors her. You know, he woke her up too.
Yeah.
You know, so the movie was like her mood the whole way.
Well, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't until you just said that, but
well, all right.
It really was.
It's the magic. It's happening, people. Right here, right in front of you.
You saw it happen. Yeah.
Well, you heard it.
So it's a German movie. I don't know if they did any dubbing. I the version that I saw, I was reading subtitles. Is that
Me
how
too.
You saw it too?
That's how
and
I prefer.
I prefer that. You know, I don't like it when they dub. I prefer to hear that language, and you know, it's neat.
Yeah, I was going to ask which way. Well, I like to hear the language, and German's fun because there's so many words that we've got to or very similar. And then it's fun to hear them doing slipping other words in.
Mm-hmm.
Like there were a couple times where somebody was using an English word. And we were like, that was English. And also you want to hear the actors giving their own performance.
Right.
Is how we feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you get so much that way, you know.
Yeah. Oh,
and plus
you
get to learn a little bit of German.
That's right.
Nine Danke.
That's right.
And I guess
no,
hello.
Do you want something to eat? No, thank you.
Yeah, there was a scene where Martha is falling asleep on the couch and the girl's drinking milk, just watching her. And then Martha finally wakes up and she says, oh, good morning, Lena. And Lena goes, hello.
Hello.
And then she says, oh, by the way, It's 8:30.
Did you say I was supposed to go to school today? Because we're late. Well, the thing I liked was I realize, of course, I like this movie for several reasons, but one of which is because I just love all the food sequences because I like to cook. I've read a zillion books during my life about all this stuff, and so I just love seeing the professional restaurant. And Martha's very much into food, but I realize how much I was worried about that little girl who, because her mother had died and she was both depressed and also kind of trying to control her, you got a feeling, trying to control her situation, she wouldn't eat at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And she'd been injured in the accident, so you're like, oh my gosh, and the doctors are going, try to get her to eat, and she's drinking milk, and I'm thinking, oh, that's got some nutritional value. Maybe she's drinking a lot of milk. I was really worried about her. Oh good, she's having a glass of milk.
I had a similar thought. Yep. It's like,
it's the parent in us.
Maybe it is, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's interesting because Martha defines herself by food. And usually if you say that, you think of somebody who overeats or that kind of thing. But Martha's interesting because she absolutely loves food as her art or as her form of expression, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, for a lot of the movie, I was kind of wondering if she was going to pass out a few times because she also won't eat.
That's true, too. I hadn't made that connection either, but I remember her assistant. Is that the sous chef or, you know?
I guess.
I don't know how, you know, I absolutely loved all the food parts, by the way. And I'm not really a foodie or anything. You know, mm-hmm. I've had a dinner in that type of a restaurant maybe 3 or 4 times in my whole life.
Yes.
But, and Ratatouille is where I learned all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it reminded me of Ratatouille, the kitchen scenes. Another show that I recall with a lot of kitchen scenes is a BBC TV series called Chef.
Chef.
Yes. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
I love that.
I didn't see all those episodes, but I enjoyed that one too.
Yeah. That one it was either the second or the third season. It kind of fell apart some.
Oh,
I think it only had 3 seasons. It's for me, it got kind of weird and a little more depressing, you know, as they started delving into relationships more and stuff. But the first season can't be beat, and possibly the second. I just can't remember. I've never finished it.
Yeah, I don't think I finished the first season. I was watching it on Netflix, and I don't know that it's still available that way. I'd have to look, but I enjoyed that one too.
Yeah, we used to own it on DVD, and then I gave it to one of the kids when I was like, I don't think I'm going to watch this anymore. And they're, probably Hannah.
How about that? That's cool.
Likes to collect all those things.
Yeah, yeah.
But
the point I was making, the sous chef or her assistant, offered her a sandwich at one point, and I didn't make that connection that, you know, she's not eating either, and Lena wouldn't eat. So Lena wasn't eating because of what happened to her mother, and now, you know, her mother got killed in a car accident, so now Lena's with Martha. You're right. There was another scene where she made a whole meal for herself.
Right.
And she heard...
It was her day off.
It was her day off. She made a whole meal for herself. Yeah. And there's a guy moving in downstairs, and she can hear the music, and she just gets up and goes downstairs and says, hey, can I give you some food? But yeah, she never ate any of that.
No, now she sat down with her knife and fork, and it was like she was looking at it going, I don't want to eat it, though.
Wow, and there was another thing where she said, I never eat in the afternoon.
Yeah, that was the every restaurant before, well, most every restaurant before they start getting ready for the evening service or, you know, before they start actually having the customers come in, they have their own meal that some other one of the cooks will cook for them. And they all sit around and have a meal together. Yeah. And she would never eat it, though. She was always reading.
Yeah.
And until Mario shows up. But
so
yeah.
What's the significance of all that?
I looked at it as, well, for one thing, I looked at it as control. You know, like anorexic people, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make themselves better somehow. They're miserable. And they're trying to, you know, they don't look pretty enough or whatever. And that's, they're trying to fix it. And they don't know how. But what I was interested in was she and her niece Lena both have the same reaction. We don't know what happened to Martha. We don't know what made her broken. Mm-hmm. But we know that she's broken enough that the movie starts off with you seeing her at the therapist. And she's describing meals to him.
Yeah,
and how to cook things.
Yeah,
and
when we first see her, she's describing how she cooks pigeon.
Right, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I thought we agreed you weren't going to do this. She's like, why are you here? Let's ask this question. And she's like, well, my boss makes me come. She says I'm compulsive or something.
She's like,
I don't know what she's talking about.
my boss will fire me if I don't get therapy.
Yeah.
Right? And then, clearly she's been going a long time. They know each other very well, her and the therapist. Yeah.
Because later on she cooks something for him and he says, I thought we agreed you weren't going to cook for me anymore. And she goes, well, and he said, as he says it, he's tucking his napkin in and picking up his knife and fork because he's going to eat it.
Because it's good. Yeah. And then he says,
second best in the city.
And then he says, if you would join me, then I'd be convinced that we're making progress. And she doesn't get up and join him.
Mm-mm. She's running that show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole aspect I hadn't thought of till now. That's really something. Yep.
Yeah.
And then Lena comes into the picture, and Lena, like you said, she's clearly broken because of what happened, and she won't eat. And now Martha's worried sick about Lena because she's distraught when she cooks a meal. Lena's first night there, she cooks a big meal and then sets it on the table, and then her and Lena both sit at the table, and then Lena says, I'm not really hungry. And then, to Martha's credit, she says, well, could I make you something different? You know, after making that whole thing, she swallows her pride and says, maybe I'm giving her something she doesn't like. And I expect her to get upset or something. You know, I was, because she gets so upset at work.
Oh, my gosh,
that
yes.
I thought maybe she would get upset at the kid, but she never did. She just, well, she did at one point in the movie, but
that was
a different
legit
thing. Yeah. But here she was very calm and said, well, can I make you something else? And Lena said no. And then Lena said, can I go to my room? And she said, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, because Martha doesn't have any friends that we can see outside of work.
Yeah.
And she's trying to connect with that guy downstairs a little bit, but she doesn't know how. And once he starts trying to connect with her, she's too absorbed with her problems with Lena to even understand what he's doing. But it's interesting that she is trying, even though she's kind of a cold person who doesn't naturally let people in, she is trying her very hardest to do what she can for her niece. And the problem is the niece, as she says at the very end of the movie, is very much like her.
Yeah.
She's hard to get along with. She doesn't open up.
Yeah, and I remember them saying that too. And it is interesting that before the accident happened, she called her sister and was talking to her sister on the phone. So it kind of reiterates that she really doesn't have any close friends because she's asking her, you know, she's clearly lonely and clearly trying to decide what to do, you know. And
did she call her sister?
Yeah, she was talking to her sister, and she said, what does Lena like to eat? And this was before the accident. She
I just didn't remember it. Okay.
And then her sister said,
she'll eat anything.
Yeah, she said she'll eat anything except for things that are alive, like mussels, right?
Right.
Yeah. And, that's when they kind of made the plan that, her sister was on the way from wherever she was.
That's when you know she's going to come and visit, and I'll be there, and this and that. And well, and it's kind of interesting because you expect that they will bond over food because they say try to get her to eat something when Lena is still in the hospital. And so Martha shows up, and this cracks me up. She's got this big bag, and she starts pulling out plates. You know, I'm like, because the hospital's not good. You know, you can't just eat this off of anything. She's got real plates.
Yeah.
But she's cooked for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, in an American movie, at some point, she would manage to win her over with the food, and they would bond, or they would cook together, or they would something. And this movie doesn't ever go there.
No,
it's
it doesn't.
It's very honest, I think, in how it doesn't go down those paths that I would look at and go, oh, an American movie would do this. Mm-hmm. Now, there is an American version, but I don't remember it very well, and I don't recommend it, but
you were saying.
But it doesn't ever – there are several spots where you can just see, oh, they're going to – oh, no, they don't do that. Okay.
Hmm.
you know, to me, yeah. I thought.
Yeah, well, you're right. She ended up, because she works nights, you know, she must get home at, you know, midnight or later yeah. every night because she's working the, you know, dinner. She ends up taking her daughter, or this girl, her niece, I'm sorry, to work. And that was interesting because now her daughter's meeting all kinds of people, and she would hop down from where she was sitting, and I remember she walked to where they were preparing the plates, and mm-hmm. You know, you could see Martha light up a little bit. You know, she would smile now and then when the kid was around, and they're putting this together, and that kind of, I was thinking the same thing as maybe you were thinking, that, you know, hey, maybe she's going to be like a brilliant chef or something. You know what I mean? she's going to love it, and she's going to yeah. start kind of wanting to follow in her footsteps. But she just went, turned around and went back and sat down, and you could see Martha deflate a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that was interesting.
And what it takes is when Mario shows up, because mm-hmm. one of the chefs is pregnant and is going to have to, of course, leave to have her baby and needs to have fewer hours. And so when Martha's gone, because Martha just doesn't want to replace that person, the yeah, owner of the yeah. restaurant brings in Mario, who's Italian, but very good. And he tells Martha at one point, he says, you know, I didn't have to have this job. I can go anywhere and they'll take me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's good at what he does. And one of the things he's really good at, though, is savoring life. And I guess perhaps that's the Italian thing, or it's just him. But he is, you know, he's putting on Dean Martin, singing Volare, and he's livening things up. And everybody loves him except, of course, Martha. And he manages to get the little girl to eat by treating her like she's almost not there.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes and sits down. He, oh, look, I'll put this on the pasta. And he's eating it. And she's kind of looking, and he looks at her. She looks away.
Yeah.
And then he's, oh, I got to go. There's something's on fire. Here, hold this.
Mm-hmm.
And then she starts eating. So he understands people, because he also understands Martha, because he notices she's never eating, and he manipulates her too.
Yeah, he does. He has a deep understanding of people.
Yeah.
And a love for them too.
Yeah.
He likes everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the thing that made me start, and this whole movie, you know, you and I have talked, I believe, on here before about that TED Talks, The Power of Being Vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
This whole movie kind of epitomizes what's wrong with trying to control everything in your life, and how important it is to take a risk and be brave sometimes. Because what you see through the movie, I think, is that love requires courage. You have to be able to take that risk and make yourself vulnerable. And maybe you'll lose, and maybe you'll get snubbed. But if somebody doesn't do it, no one ever connects.
Yep.
And that's what happens. He just very continually, without being a pest, but just because he understands people and he's interested in Martha and the little girl, he keeps being himself and trying in different ways to connect.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes him sound needy, and he's not needy at all.
No, I don't think he is either.
He's very secure.
He's very secure, yeah. In fact, he's so secure that at one point when, you know, Martha's the one who's in charge of the kitchen. So, you know, after this accident, and now she's got Lena, she's having trouble holding everything together because she's got a whole different sphere that she needs to act in, you know. She's got to worry about this child all the time. So anyway, it wasn't working very well at first. Plus, she had all of her own emotions to deal with about losing her sister. So this guy was hired without her permission. So she's immediately threatened by him. You know, I didn't pick this guy up. And so there's this instant threat. And he asks her, what is your problem, basically, at one point?
Yeah.
And she says, well, this is my kitchen. You know, I fought long and hard to get here, and you're not going to take it away from me. And then he starts to talk to everybody in the kitchen, you know.
He's like, when I turn around,
I was like, oh, if that I could just go, oh my gosh.
Well, they're watching. That was a private conversation. Come
on. Yeah, they know exactly what's going on. It's not like they do, but yeah. And then he says, well, I'm going to go ahead and leave then. If you don't want me here, I need to hear you say that you want me to stay. And that's how secure he was. He was like, plus he showed up an hour late once.
Right, but you know what the thing was when he, with him making that statement about you have to say it's okay, he was also at the same time giving her the props for being the head of the kitchen because the owner of the restaurant says, it's my kitchen. He says, no, it's not. That's your restaurant. And he points at Martha. He says, she's the boss here.
Yeah, this is her kitchen. Without her, this is a pile of metal.
Right.
Yeah, it was a good line. Yeah.
And so at one point, she's forced to acquiesce. Yes, I need you. Yes, stay. But at the same time, it's because he's making her do that that he's showing he respects her.
Yeah, he's showing. Yeah, and he's giving her the opportunity to make the decision, and thus breaking through that.
Yeah,
but she could have said, you know, just go.
Well, and that's
he would have been all right with it, I think.
Well, he might not have been all right with it, but he would have done it.
Yeah, he would have done it. Yep.
he would have said okay. But the thing that kind of gets me is watching Martha through all this. I'm looking at this, going, you know, isn't this what we all do if we're unhappy? We start trying to fix or control our situation, and a lot of times it doesn't work because what we need to do is kind of look at it a different way, or loosen up, or do something different, and we don't want to. You know, sometimes we can fix things, you know, but I'm just talking about like emotional unhappiness and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So somebody like Mario comes along and, you know, she's clamming up even worse because it was really telling. I thought when he was trying to be friendly, he's like, oh, what is the recipe you have for that saffron sauce? That is the best thing ever. And she's like, oh, why does he want my saffron sauce recipe? He's trying to take over. So it shows her paranoid way of thinking, but it's also that thing of, you know, when somebody comes along and starts trying to open you up and wrest that control away, you feel like you're giving in and you're losing. But what you're really doing a lot of the times is you're trading that perceived safety for something better when you look back.
Yeah, yeah.
But first you have to take that leap of faith. And it's scary.
It is.
You know, and that's what Martha is showing.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I find that inspiring, you know, it's not only with love, but with anything, you know, you can spend your whole life in a room or you can go do something. And every time you go do something, you're putting yourself out there and can be rejected. But yet, if you don't take that chance,
you're not living.
You're not living, right?
Yeah.
You know, I know I've mentioned this movie before, but that Three Colors, blue.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The first of the Three Colors.
It's on my list.
It's a terrific movie, and it's kind of about the same thing, but it's not a comedy in any way. This is about a woman who loses her family, and wants to. She wants to live life without anybody else after she does it. So the very, very first scene in the movie, she loses her family. And then the rest of the movie is her trying to deal with that. And the main thing that she wants to do is basically be an island and not let anything touch her.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, I got a cat
watching
here.
her try to do that and whether it works or doesn't work. And
exactly.
Well, it's funny because when I think of that issue of control and unhappiness and how it really doesn't work, because we really don't know what we need. We think we know, but we don't. And I know, and I'm sorry, everyone, you've heard about my father enough times, but, you know, he was very unhappy and he didn't know what to do. And, you know, his solution was to kind of become a hermit, just watch TV all the time and, you know, do a lot of drinking. And when you know, tried to change it, he would get very angry. He knew what was right. He was perfectly happy, blah, blah, blah. And instead, it was just like watching him enter his own private hell a lot of the time, especially toward the end. And so I just look at this and you talking about that's kind of what in blue, that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah, and
I mean that's an extreme example, obviously.
Sure. But yeah, it's interesting, and that's also a subtitled movie. Chemin de Mer. Oh, I think it wasn't. Well, it was in French.
It's French, right? Exactly. But it was that Polish director.
It was a Polish director, Krzysztof. Right. I'm sure that I'll butcher it. I called it up here on IMDb. Kieslowski.
Kieslowski.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know. I just
anyway. He's
I got brave.
Absolutely brilliant. Everything that I've seen that he's done has blown me away completely. So, and I have a lot more to see.
And that's what I've heard. I just haven't ever. Is he the one who did the Ten Commandments?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
That was on Polish TV.
Mm-hmm.
It was a miniseries.
Yep. And I saw the first DVD of that.
Okay.
So, which was, I think it was the first three.
Okay. Well, yeah. That would make sense.
Ten. Remarkable. Okay. Remarkable.
That's Rose also saw those and has recommended them to me.
Oh, good. Yeah. They're very serious. You know, it's not frivolous.
Right.
But it's just. Yeah, and you need to sit down and you're reading subtitles, so you've got to be focused and you watch it, and it's just, yeah.
But you know, once you
remarkable
get the hang of subtitles, it's not that.
Yeah, I don't mind subtitles at all. It's, you know, you can't, you know, I don't usually do something else at the same time, you know.
No,
but
you no, can that's
when there's subtitles.
It does make you watch it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
If it's foreign, I put my knitting down.
Watching when we did it. In Bruges, even though it was in English, I put on the subtitles.
Oh, did you?
I did. Because it wasn't the first time I'd seen it, you know. It was the
that's
second
like
time I saw
my mother-in-law
it. And I put on the subtitles
because
I couldn't understand
the
what they were saying. Yeah.
But she couldn't understand it. And she couldn't hear very well. And so we put on the subtitles and she was so happy. We'll just do this then. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in mostly Martha... that actress was excellent.
I would like to see her in some other
things. Her name is Martina Gedeck, G-E-D-E-C-K.
Okay.
And she was so good. And I looked to see what else she was in, and she was in The Good Shepherd, which is an American movie.
Huh. Is that a CIA type?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I need to watch that and see. That was the only, you know, in the list of, you know, it's the only one I recognized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I'm just looking at it again. But yeah, I thought she was great. I'd love to see her in something else. She can do a lot with her eyebrows.
She was subtle a lot
she
of
was
the time,
subtle,
wasn't she?
And I love that. Is one of the first things I noticed about Johnny Depp was... Benny and June.
Mm-hmm.
And
I haven't seen it, but.
there was a scene where he and June were telling, you haven't seen that movie?
No.
Okay. They were telling her brother something that was going on, and he told the guy completely with his face, not saying a word. And,
I've been told I should see that movie.
It's a really good movie.
Yeah. That's
very,
what
very
I've heard.
Good. Yep.
Well, that's like Harrison Ford,
mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day. I mean, now he's in, I don't know what happened to him or his agent or maybe just, I don't know. Anyway, but back when he was acting all the time, he could do stuff with just like an eyebrow or a twitch of the mouth. And I just go, oh my gosh, he's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
But I watched this actress and the whole time I kept thinking, okay, right now, I'm looking at this going, if Tina Fey isn't like mostly German or Meryl Streep, because for me, was it Meryl Streep? But it, for sure, Tina Fey, the more I kept watching, the more I kept going, no, it's not Tina Fey, don't, because she just had a very similar look.
Yeah, she did. You know, she reminded me a little bit of Emma Watson. I know, oh, yeah. I mean, she's older than Emma Watson, clearly, but she reminded me of her, the expressions and things.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I thought she was great. And the actress who played the little girl, her name was Maxime Forest, F-O-E-R-S-T-E.
Okay.
And I thought she was good too. We talked a little bit before the podcast how, you know, they didn't try to make her look perfect and things. There was some really nice details. You know, just, you know, let's make her look like she got herself ready this morning.
Well, yeah, because her hair never really looked like it was brushed. I mean, it wasn't sticking out, but it was just always kind of untidy the way little kids' hair is a lot.
Yeah.
And whoever did that and the directing was really good.
And it was.
You could tell they were Tom was looking it up and he was like, oh, I can't remember where they were, but they were on the North Sea in Germany. Uh-huh. And it was always gray and cold and there was snow falling all the time. And by the time they go to Italy at the end to find the little girl's or father or whatever, yeah, yeah. you know, and it's green and it's like summertime. And I'm like, and then they go back and it's snowing. And I'm like, wow, really?
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
when Tom said North Sea. I went, oh, okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. The director's name is Sandra Nettelbeck.
Okay.
Yeah, and she also wrote it.
Oh.
So, yeah, that's neat. And, of course, the guy who played the Italian...
Mario.
Yeah, of course, Mario. But he was terrific.
He was. Well, yeah. They were all good,
yep.
And it's... I don't know... Oh, I also really liked the touch at the very end... when the therapist has cooked the dessert and she's tasted it and she's saying something's not right. And they're going through, did you cook it like this? Yes, I did. I baked it like this and it was exactly. And she finally says, sugar, what kind of sugar? Did you use this kind of sugar? And he goes, how can you taste what kind of sugar I've used? And she said, I can't, but I can taste what sugar you didn't use. And he just, I give up. And so he walks away and she just sits there with this little smile. And the thing is, he's cooking now.
Yeah, yeah.
He's cooking for himself. She's inspired him to do that. And that little smile was kind of just like she was happy. There was balance. She was able to spar with him kind of like a friend instead of just hiding behind her passion for her cooking.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of neat to think of it that way. You know, that's not what I thought at the moment, but... I thought she was just reflecting and was happy kind of where she was at, but that is also what you're saying. But the equality between the two of them, that's neat. Yeah. So she's finished with him. Well, no more therapy needed, I hope. Yeah.
Well, that or she made huge strides, you know, because by then you've seen through the little end credit pictures
she
that they're married and
she actually ate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true, too.
Yeah, when they go to Italy and her Mario's doing the toast and plates are being passed and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Italy. Yeah, that was really something else. But, yeah, I really liked this movie. I really, really did. You know, you mentioned the music, too, and how it was a little 80s-ish. Is that what you called it?
It was like 80s jazz. It was like
80s
Tootsie,
jazz. Yeah, you know, Tootsie, right.
Maybe Tootsie was that kind
what
of
what it reminded
soft
me
jazz
of. Have you ever seen the movie Roxanne?
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of that. Oh, I love that movie, too. Yeah, written by Steve Martin. But, yeah, I thought that's
movie.
Where I immediately thought of Roxanne when I heard the first notes of the saxophone.
I know. I heard it and I was like, oh, I guess in 50 years, this is going to be charmingly dated. Like when we listen to music from the 30s or something.
Right, right.
In movies. And I'm like, but right now it just hurts. It's just too old. It's from like the 80s or 90s or whatever. And I'm like, oh. And I was like, oh, I hope Scott doesn't let that bother him.
Not
you know?
At all. I always find that stuff interesting.
Yeah. You know. Well, it had never bothered me before, but I listened and I went, oh, it's dated.
Yeah.
You know, but I loved the Paolo Conti, I think is how you say his name. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of like Mario's theme music.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was like exuberant singing of this song that I can't remember what it was.
And Dean Martin, you know, Dean Martin singing a song. He's like, everybody quiet. Listen
it's
to
like,
how he savors this song.
He knows how to live. Yeah, exactly. He savors the song.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's Dino. Of course he's savoring the song. He's the best ever.
That's right. That's right. And he is.
That's right.
That's right.
I know there are people who prefer Frank Sinatra, but they just don't get it. Sorry.
You bet. I went down in my brother's basement not too long ago. He lives up in Washington. And in his basement, he has a poster. I mean, he's got a pool table and a bar. And there's a poster of the Rat Pack.
Oh.
So you've got Dino and Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. And
yes.
I forget the other guy.
But not anyway. Peter Lawford, huh?
Yeah, you know, I think that's right. I think it is Peter
Lawford.
Joey
Bishop, I think, yeah, was there Joey sometimes. Bishop.
And that's the five. But yeah, they were, neat picture. You know, cool down in that basement. Yep. I like Dino.
I love him. Who doesn't love him? He just sounds happy and cheerful all the time.
Yep.
The other thing this movie made me think of is when we make things into our idols we worship them instead of having a proper perspective, you know, because think of how passionate.
What do you think? What was her idol?
Well,
just timing and control.
Think how she was with the foie gras.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the guy's like, this foie gras is not done. And she's like, it was cooked like this. It is perfect. This foie gras is perfect. And and I guess it could just be that she knew so much. But the thing is she understood that food so well. Like when Mario's doing that, you know, people, if you haven't seen this movie and you want to see a scene that kind of gets you going just from somebody tasting a sauce, I'm going to say, and it's nothing they do with the spoon or anything. It is just...
Yeah,
she's blindfolded, tasting the sauce and telling him what's in it.
Yeah, and I got the feeling right then. I mean, that she melted. You know,
it was
almost as if she came out of that with a new perspective on food.
Yeah, he understood her.
Yeah,
he understood what she loved, and but he also got it too.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So he was wooing her. That was kind of like the final. It was great, and then when she kisses him and says, "And star anise." And you're just like, yes. But and the way, like, when the guy wants his steak more rare.
Yeah. Oh,
and she'll, okay, I'm going to cook him a new one. The owner or whoever it is, like, just do it. Don't argue. Just so she does it. And then it comes back again. And so she takes the raw steak and a huge knife and plunges the steak on the knife onto the top of the table and goes, is that raw enough? Shall I get you salt and pepper?
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing that's when people, it's what is due to the food, you know, that's like what's due to your God, or what, that's the food is her idol in that way. She's made it the center of everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so she, in that sense, worships it because she gives it everything that's due to people around her, or if you're a Christian, to God, you know? And so,
yeah, and I felt, you know, when she was explaining to the therapist, you know, in that opening scene, how she puts together that pigeon, right? And it's all timing and this and that, and you got to do this. And then later on, when she's feeding him, she's describing, you don't have any idea how hard it is to keep track of everything that you need to do at once while she's doing this, constantly in motion.
Yeah.
It's almost like she enjoyed that activity a whole lot as well. She liked the whole clockworkness of it all, and how you do this then and you do this then, and you're constantly in motion in that kitchen. It's like a constantly under, you know, you've got these little tiny deadlines or whatever, you know, and she's moving the pots over, you know, and I think she loved that, and she kept trying to explain that to the therapist. Or
yeah,
she kept saying
so.
That to the therapist, you know?
But also, she is like, I'm trying to think how to do, I know people like that. Well, shoot. My family can do this kind of thing if we felt like, I mean, you know, we don't cook like that, but we can talk about it that kind of way.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of like somebody who just loves science fiction so much and goes to all the conventions. Kind of thing, and they like really get into Doctor Who or whatever.
Or you got to collect that last book.
You know, it's being the comic book guy of, you know, whatever your chosen thing is you're such a specialist.
Yeah, and I got to tell you that the most satisfying time I've ever had in my professional life was doing this manufacturing plant, you know, working 60 hours a week for about 6 weeks and just doing thing after thing after thing after thing, and it works and it works and it works and it works. And it's like you're keeping all this stuff in the air, you know, everybody calling you on the radio, they need you here now, they need you here now, they need you here now. And when you can control the schedule, meaning that, you know, if you stay in ahead of everything, everything's going to work out. And when you do that and it's hard and it works, there's nothing better. I mean, that's just awesome. Yeah. It's great.
And it is, but it is hard work, and it can be mm-hmm. very stressful keeping it all going, but mm-hmm. you don't have to think.
Yeah.
You don't have time for a lot of other stuff, so you don't aren't distracted by a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that sounds like...
I think
like,
that comes with experience, too. You know, that not thinking, I think, is one of the important pieces, because you're experienced enough that you know enough what you're doing, so you don't experience right. that questioning of yourself, which freezes you.
Well, and that's, because that's like doing that Worthington catalog, that big school catalog that mm-hmm. I work on every year. And yeah. it's the same thing. You kind of have to get yourself into the groove. Once you've had a day or so of working on those spreads, so then it's just like, yeah, you have to work the extra hours and everything, but you're just figuring how many spreads do you have to have done in order to make all these deadlines, and it's all working. And yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. But,
yeah, yeah.
But you don't have time for other stuff, and nobody demands it of you because they know you're super busy.
Yeah, I remember with my family.
So you don't have to.
Because you see it coming.
It's
you know?
Not messy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. When you have a family, if you have support and you can mm-hmm. say, okay, you know, hey, for the next 2 months, this is going to be difficult.
Right.
And, you know, we all know this going in, but, yep. you know, this is what needs to happen and, you know, help me out. And
yeah.
when all that's humming right along, I mean, man, it's just a great feeling.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is. Well, and there's one point in this movie when, and it's toward, it must be in the last third, because she's been thrown off by, not thrown off, but I mean, you know, she's kind of off kilter because of Mario. And, you know, she's now, she cares a lot more about Lena, although she never goes around talking about it like you would in an American mm-hmm. movie. But, you know, you know she's more attached and things aren't going right there. And she, at one point, goes into the kitchen. No one else is there yet. And she, you know, puts on her apron and she stands there as if she's going to start something. And then she just kind of stands there like yeah. at a loss.
And, you know, I understand time. That completely.
Yeah.
Because that's something that I do too. You know, when I was at the theater and things and you know that it's going to be chaos. One of the things that I love to do was show up early.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much to do stuff, but to be there, because there was something about being able to be there when no one else was there and then having it slowly build up to chaos that mm-hmm. was made it handleable for me, you know?
Right.
I love going to places early. It drives my wife insane. You know, if we're going to a basketball game, I love to show up half an hour early and wow. watch them warm up or something.
Oh,
you know,
I
just
see.
Love
okay,
that.
Okay.
You know, I really,
it's
there's
the
just
whole
something
experience.
About it. There's just something about,
yeah,
being there and then watching everything happen from when people start to come in. I being behind the scenes in a place is what I love most of all.
It's very yeah. interesting. Well, yeah. and but the thing with her is before she would do that, but she would always have plenty to do.
Yeah, yeah.
This time, she suddenly, that's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
She's at a loss.
Yeah.
Which was kind of my point. But yeah, she's otherwise, she's just there because that's why she cooks on her day off. It's the only thing she knows to do.
Yeah, it's all like she's keeping her skills, you know?
Yeah.
She doesn't really know what else to do.
No,
you know, it's
yeah,
like being a programmer at work
meal.
And coming home and getting on the computer.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like if that's what you love, there, you know, that's okay. But if you're missing everything else, I would have to say you're going too far, you know?
Well, and it's like what Francis de Sales said in the introduction to The Devout Life.
Yeah.
If you're playing a game and you're playing it 6 hours a day, it's not a game anymore. It's a job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it's work. It's not entertainment. And for me, what I have to try to do is keep myself off the computer when I'm not at work or off more, not mm-hmm. too much, because yeah. otherwise you just do everything through the computer, or I could.
Sure. Sure.
You know, between yeah. blogging and podcasting and all these various things. And it's
I could
like,
too.
I look
yeah.
out and the sun's shining. I should do something out in the backyard.
Yeah. And sometimes we need to. Yeah.
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 The dogs would like it. We just follow you from desk to desk.
Yeah. No question. No question.
Yeah, so.
So, but yeah. Yep. Terrific movie.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I really did.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything else lately?
We saw Looper a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. I saw on Letterboxd that you really liked that movie.
Yeah. It was.
I have not seen it, so.
Yeah, it mm-hmm. was. It's like everybody else has said, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil it. Well, but fantastic. I highly recommend it. We'll probably have to watch it sometime.
Ooh, sign me up.
Yeah. Well, this podcast is going to have to go on for years, right? To watch all the movies and read all the books.
Oh, yeah. That's right. But, that's right. It's never going to end.
Okay. I like that. All right.
Sign me up.
Okay. All right. But yeah, so and what about you?
Well, the best thing that I've watched lately, again, I think I've mentioned it here already, it was Luther.
Since
the last time we talked about it, I watched the second series.
I saw that on Letterboxd.
Yeah, and that show just gets me. There's just something about it. It's just quirky enough. Idris Elba is incredible. I mean, when he walks in the scene, he's who you watch. You know, he's one of those actors. And, you know, we're going to see him. He's going to be doing movies. I know he's already been doing some, but he's not like the lead man. But he will be any time now. I mean, I think he's going to be really big. And, I heard him. I don't know if this is just a rumor or not, but they're talking about, you know, hey, he may be Bond someday. They may have him play James Bond. Yeah.
Is he black?
He is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That would be interesting.
It would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be cool.
I thought I remembered that from the DVD cover. I'm like, there's a twist in Fleming to think
that's
of.
That's right. That would be something.
Probably.
But yeah, word of warning on Luther. It is intense, and especially in the series two. Series one was intense, but series two, I mean, there are some uncomfortable things that happen. You know, Jodie Foster was in a movie, Silence of the Lambs. Now that was the most disturbing. I remember coming out of that movie being disturbed.
That's you why know, that, I never went to see it.
That was a disturbing film. And this one, there's a serial killer in it, and it's not quite as spooky as that, but it is, you know, your imagination is worse than showing it to you. So, you know, when this guy is killing people, you know, he may be behind a counter. But you can tell kind of, oh, geez, you know, oh my gosh.
I saw a serial killer written down. I was like, well, that's it. I already knew it was gritty. So nope.
Yeah. But what's amazing about it is Luther, and he's the thing is he's gray. So he can look by gray. I mean, he's not good or evil. He's in the middle. He can look at a crime scene or whatever, and he'll, you know, just like he kind of understands what they're thinking, and he can see something and say, oh, this guy was thinking this, and it always helps him find a killer. But he's also the type of person who's not all the 100% clean. And, so it makes he's just a very interesting character and a lot of terrible things happen to him. So, intense show. Yeah. But and I understand that too. And, you know, so I'm glad I gave you the warning because, you know, if you don't want to watch that kind of stuff, you shouldn't. So
I can watch The Good Wife, which I recommend to everyone.
Yes. And that's something I still haven't seen that I want to.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny because, I was talking with some friends about it last night, and one other friend had seen it and just said, wow, yes, such a smart show. So well acted. And I think it's because the husband and wife who started the show still are with it. They're taking care of their baby, you know, the right episodes still and everything. And it's funny because one of the things I liked is, oh gosh, what's her name? The main actress, Julianne Margolis.
She was in ER.
She is so good at acting restrained.
Mm-hmm.
She's a grown up. She's civilized, but she's really a good person. I mean, you know, she's always going to tell the truth. She's always going to take the high road. She's all these various things, even though she's not goody goody. But it's each show is written so cleverly and it's so interesting. I am surprised that what is this, the fourth season or something like that? And it's still good, which is rare, I think.
That's neat. Yeah, really good.
I was going to say also, we watched a Billy Wilder movie called Ace in the Hole. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't. Mm-mm.
It's one most people haven't heard of, but Tom read a biography of Billy Wilder, and they were saying this was a movie that he was really, really proud of, but nobody really liked it. And I see why now. But if you want to see Kirk Douglas in something where he is not Spartacus, this is the movie to see. And it's cool. Basically set, well, it's black and white. I believe it's in the set in the, it's in the 50s. It was done. And it's set in New Mexico, in the Albuquerque. And Kirk Douglas shows up, and just from the way he's talking and the things he says, you could tell he was a sleazy newsman back in New York, back in Chicago, all these places. He'd work for him and get paid high bucks, but then he'd always do something that would get him fired. So here he is. He needs a job. And eventually what happens is they hire him, and there's this interesting dichotomy because the guy who runs the newspaper is super honest. I mean, he has tell the truth. You know, on his wall. Somebody did it in needlepoint. It's on his wall. And then you've got Kirk Douglas, who's going around going, I can make a story happen. I'm going to get myself back in the big time. And his big chance comes when a man is caught down in a cave by a cave-in. And watching the way this newsman handles the situation and handles the people, you just go, wow, this is an indictment of American media. Wow. And the carnival has not ended, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, the way they just converge like vultures at some horrible thing that's happened and never let people alone. That's what's going on here. And he's talking about it that far back. And unfortunately, and maybe this is why people didn't like it, but the American public is not shown as being the smartest people either. They're like the sheep flocking in to see what's going on. Because it's a spectacle.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't mean they're not warm-hearted and they don't care about the guy caught in the cave, but it's really, and it's a film noir piece.
Okay.
It's really good.
That's great. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it, but it was really good. Yeah.
Well, good. Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's one other that I wanted to mention.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Rose, I have Rose to thank for continuing my education. I watched a documentary that she recommended called The Cutting Edge, The Magic of Movie Editing. And it was terrific. I learned a heck of a lot. Certainly don't know everything. Love to try to do that, but, what a cool job that is. But it's a great documentary. It's available on Netflix, not streaming, but you know, you can get it on DVD. And I think it's somewhere online too. I'll have to see if it is.
I know.
Just a one word of warning. You know, there's a couple of rated R scenes in there, and I don't think it's rated. Just FYI, you know, in case somebody wants to show their kids or something. But, great show. I learned a lot. It's sometimes, you know, when you take a class about writing, let's say, and then you read something and you start to see things, you know, about how the writer put this together. It's funny. Since I watched that, now I'm seeing edits. And I swear I was blind to them before I watched this. I really, unless it was something completely out of the ordinary, I wouldn't notice. But now I can see what they do, and it's fascinating.
It's both good and bad.
Yeah,
because having watched enough movies with Rose, as she was taking all these various classes and things, you know, and she'd point stuff out, and I go, "Oh, thank you for pulling me out of the movie." But yeah, you'll look at it and you'll go, especially like the second time through a movie, you know, you look at it and you go, "Oh, I see what they did there.
Look at that. Look at that."
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she'll tell you, she can tell you, and I'm sure they have that in this documentary, which I didn't even notice her mention, but since you've mentioned it, I put it on my list to watch.
Yeah. She didn't mention it to me directly, but it was on Letterboxd.
Yeah,
she just threw it on there, and then I saw that pass by, and I was like, oh, I should watch that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And now I have one on my list that Joseph recommended about cinematography, and I don't have the name of that in front of me.
Oh, is that called The Light Invisible?
Something like that.
Something like that.
I threw it on my Netflix queue. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll watch that. See.
And Rose hadn't heard of it because I sent her the name to her. And so,
okay. Yeah, the Oscars are coming up, aren't they?
They are. And I wish I'd seen Argo because watcher? It seems to be winning everything.
Yeah, do you
no,
like
I'm not.
To? You're not. I never have been either. But it's Visions of Light is what it's called.
Okay.
Visions of Light.
Very good. I had none of the name right.
Mm-hmm. It's got 4.5 stars on Netflix.
Okay.
People like it.
Yeah. So, well, Oscars, mm-hmm. though, but you know, this year, for some reason, I've seen a surprising number of Oscar contenders, and that's not usually the case.
Mm-hmm.
But of course,
it's not usually the case for me either. And I've only seen one or two of them.
Uh-huh.
You know, because there's a lot of rated R ones. You know, I've got my daughter, right. So sometimes it's hard for me to go see those. Which has been, you know, Hollywood. I've been trying to go to the movies almost every weekend since, you know, take my daughter to the movies for 6 weeks. And there is like nothing.
Yeah.
Everything's rated R. Everything. The only thing that wasn't rated R is that Mama by Guillermo del Toro.
No.
We did not go see that, but come on, Hollywood. What are you doing? Give us a PG or a PG-13.
This was kind of
a long stretch.
Lincoln and all those movies.
Yeah, we saw Lincoln. I haven't seen Argo, but we went and saw Lincoln and can't remember what else is nominated.
Life of Pi. I saw Beasts of the Southern Wild, which
that one I haven't seen.
Well, like I say, that one if it won, it would just be the biggest fluke ever. I mean, not because the movie's bad necessarily, but just, you know, out of nowhere. But that's one where I came out of it saying, wow, I want to see what that director does later when it's not his first movie.
Yeah.
You know.
One that I really want to see is Zero Dark Thirty. Did you see that?
No, but I hear, you know, that director, what did she do? The Hurt Locker,
mm-hmm.
which I'd like to see because, you know, Jeremy Renner and all that. But I know that's really intense, so I keep putting off seeing it. And I hear this one's super intense.
Mm.
And so I just don't want to see people being waterboarded.
Yeah.
And stuff. I don't care about the story that much.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But you want to see it.
I do want to see it. Yeah.
Rose said it was good. She's the only one I know who's seen it.
Okay. And then Les Miserables.
Oh, yes. Wonderful.
Yeah. Good show.
I liked it.
Django Unchained.
I'm never going to see it. A prediction. I know will come true.
And then the last one is Silver Linings Playbook.
I want to see that one.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Uh-uh. No, but I've heard such good things about it.
I have too.
It's got Bradley Cooper, so, you know. I'm not going to watch those.
That's one of those.
It's
like, you know, can I take my daughter to that? I don't know. It's another rated R one that's out there.
And it's about mental illness. So.
Yeah, and it's, you know, sometimes a rated R movie is okay, you know, to, you know, there's language and things, and I don't mind having
or
my daughter there.
Or whatever.
But, you know, so if it's over the top, it's tough.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything. But, you know, there used to be a website I would go to that actually would do things like say, and they say this word 12 times, and smoke cigarettes twice, and they do this. And I would go because, you know, I didn't care about that stuff, but I did care about the violence and the sex and some of the other. And so I could kind of glance over and see, okay, it's R-rated, but okay, it's all right or not. And I can't remember what it was called, but Rose was telling me the other day that she saw a website that does that very thing.
Oh, cool. I'll have to look at that.
Yeah.
I will have to look at that.
If we find it, we can put the link up on the website.
That would be terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in the meantime, Hollywood, you're missing out. You know, you ought to be, somebody ought to be putting some kind of family something out there. Six weeks without a family movie, it's a long time.
I know.
Yeah.
It's
surprising.
Not like you're being super picky or anything. I mean, you know, you're just like, we just want to see a movie.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But anyway, thanks again for this movie.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
I really, really, really did. And it's good. One that's going in the pool room.
Oh, well, all right then. I know it's good.
Yep. No doubt. No doubt.
Pool room movie for a while. Now let's see. Next is, Jurassic Park.
Yes, Jurassic Park, the book.
I'm so looking forward to rereading.
Me too. Oh. Yep, I'm looking forward to that too. And
you've chosen your movie?
Yes. We're going to go to Italy for part of it anyway.
Okay.
We're going to watch The Godfather. Francis Ford Coppola. Yeah.
Yep. I know that.
I'll probably watch all three again in preparation. I'm one of those guys, I even like the third one.
Wow, really?
Yeah, true.
I know it has its fans.
Yep. There's just... just for a few moments during it. It's not a great movie, you know. Mm-hmm. I think 1 and 2 are excellent. 3 is not a great movie, but there's good moments. Yeah. There's moments that were remarkable. Well,
this is your chance to, I would say convert me, but it's not convert me. But this is one of those famous movies that I've always kind of gone, eh.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I read the book. I was reading the book in high school when the movie came out, and I didn't really care for the book that much. But, of course, I was in high school. I probably shouldn't have been reading that book. But my mother didn't really pay attention to that kind of thing. So was in the library. But so I've just never watched it. So it will be interesting to watch.
I'm glad that you've never seen it. It'll be interesting to see what you think.
Yeah.
I've read the book, too. And it'll be interesting to see what you think.
Yeah, I don't remember now very much about the book.
Right, right.
So,
okay.
Except that I didn't like it. And then you've picked a book, too?
Yes. It is, I'm going to make sure I have the right one here. Parable of the Talents, I believe.
Okay.
By Octavia Butler.
I remember her
I just
name,
want to make sure that that's the first one. I'm looking it up here as we're talking because there's a pair of novels. One's called Parable of the Sower. And one's called Parable of the Talents. Okay, whichever one's first is the one we want to do.
Okay.
Well, yes, Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. That's the first one, right.
Okay. But you recommend both then, I guess?
I loved them both. Again, I haven't read either of them for a long while, and I'm interested to reread this and see what I think of it in this light, the light of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We may not find a lot to love in it, but I think... It's going to be really interesting to look at it with these glasses on.
Well, sometimes not finding a lot to love is okay, too.
It sure is.
That's
sure
revealing is. In itself.
Yeah, and it is.
Octavia
Butler is remarkable. I think she's tops. I haven't read anything by her I haven't liked.
And she died relatively recently, is that
she
right?
She did.
That's the first time I ever heard of her. I'd never heard of her before then.
She's just good.
And I've never read anything.
She's done a lot of short fiction, and I haven't read by any means, and nowhere near everything that she's written.
Mm-hmm.
But I've read these two books, and I read one called Fledgling, which is one of her last novels.
Mm-hmm.
I have not read Dawn, which is supposed to be another really good one. Kindred is a famous book that she wrote.
I've heard of that I guess, because it's so famous.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And she's written a lot of short fiction that has won awards, Blood Child and nothing else is leaping to mind, but she's written several award-winning pieces of short fiction. So anyway, I hope we enjoy it.
I know. I'm looking forward to it.
And she was writing a third one called Parable of the Trickster.
Tricksters.
Yeah, so but she never finished it, darn it. But it wasn't really a trilogy. It was one of those things where she wrote one and said, you know, I think I'll write another one.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, but she always has things to say. She's not one that wrote sequels because they, you know, for the wrong reasons.
There.
For the wrong reasons, right?
Right.
She had something to say when she wrote a sequel.
Yes, well, like I say, I only heard of her whenever she died a few years ago. And then I was like, how could she write all this stuff? And I've never heard of her. So I'm glad you picked something out because I don't know anything about her.
Fantastic. Well, all right.
Yeah.
Well, that is that.
Okay.
Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening to us.
Yes. Now go cook something for yourself and sit down with a plate and a fork and eat it up.
Cook something rare.
Yes, but not too rare.
That was salt and pepper.
Yes.
All right. We'll see you in a couple weeks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.